Continuing on this path, we reach Genesis chapter 4. Awake, fear, fire, foes, awake. May not be something you recognize. If not, it's a quote from chapter 11, The Knife in the Dark, of Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings, part 1, The Fellowship of the Rings. In case you've not read it, Fatty Bulger has been left in charge of Frodo's new house at Crick Hollow. While Frodo, Sam, Merry, Pippin begin the journey to Elrond's, to the last homely house in Rivendell, Fatty's job is to make the house look occupied, to throw the enemies off for a little bit and let Frodo get down the road in some measure of safety. As soon as Fatty sees the Ringwraiths creep from the shadows, though, he's had all he can handle. And he runs out the back door, through the garden, over the fields, runs for his life. By the time the second blow of that knife that you see shatters the door, the alarm has been sounded. And that's the alarm that we saw. Awake, fear, fire, foes, awake. Quoting from Tolkien, it says, the brandy bucks were blowing the horn call of Buckland. Had not sounded for 100 years, not since the white wolves came in the fell winter when the brandy wine was frozen over. So it was something that when it went off, it got your attention. And the alarm spreads, the black figures flee into the darkness, and the hobbits there, they heed Fatty's warning. Tragedies averted. Sadly, Genesis chapter 4, Cain ignores the same warning from God. And we're going to key on those words. God comes to Cain and basically says, wake up. It's time for you to be afraid. Be aware of the fire. Watch for your enemy. Please wake up. Picking up where we left off, we resume our journey down God's path and we see in chapter 4 Adam and Eve fulfilling God's first command. Be fruitful and multiply. We're introduced to a couple of those children. The first we meet is Cain. Cain's original name, or the original meaning of his name, means got one. It's going to morph into the Hebrew word for spear or for smith, and it comes to refer to a metal worker. But when he's born, it's a celebration. Eve saying, I have gotten a man child with the help of the Lord. Seems to indicate that maybe he's the first boy after the birth of some girls that are not mentioned. And I'll come back to that in just a second. The second we meet is Abel. Abel's name means breath. It means vapor. No idea how many children Adam and Eve have. No idea how many they may have already had prior to this. Other than Seth, we don't see a lot about it later on, so no idea how many afterwards. We get to meet these two because they advance the story, and that's the way God has written His book. We look for the other details, and God says, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm following this thread right now. We do know there are others. There are at least some other daughters because, and presumably they're older, because Cain's going to find someone to marry after he leaves home. Cain is afraid of reprisal from his family. So there may have been some other boys too. It may just be that we just meet Cain and Abel. We know there are other people populating the earth. We know Adam and Eve are the two God created. Therefore, we know there are other children about whom we do not read. Cain is the first farmer we meet in God's story. Abel's the first shepherd. World rocks along and again, it's kind of like the difference between when God creates man and when man falls, we're just not sure how long it takes. Moses simply says, at some point in time. A little later down the road, they decide to make a free will offering for the Lord. And understand, this word denotes a gift, a voluntary gift, and that's important. Later on under the law, God's going to use the same word, and it's going to be associated with grain offerings that were given as signs of gratitude, not sin offering, not a sin sacrifice. Also understand, and this is important, there are no commands at this point governing offerings. God doesn't really say anything about it at all until the law. They're doing this on their own. It is by choice. They are moved by a desire to give something to their Creator, to their blesser. Cain brings an offering of produce. He's a farmer. He picks it, he brings it. Abel brings an offering from his flock. And then something happens. God accepts Abel's. God rejects Cain's. And we immediately want to know why. Remember, there's no rules. And so what would cause God to reject one and accept the other? May not be any rules, but obviously we see from the very beginning of sacrifice and worship, God has standards. God has standards that at this point He didn't necessarily have to explain to us in writing. But He expected these guys to know it. As the one to whom the offerings are made, God has the right to determine whether or not they are acceptable. And He views Abel's as acceptable and Cain's as not. So why? Why one and not the other? Start with this. It's not produce versus animal sacrifice. First of all, because He accepts both under the law. You also can add the fact that there's no law in place governing sacrifice at this time. So we go back to why. There's no specific reason where God just lays it out, this is why I'm rejecting yours. But He does give us the clues that allow us to understand what's going on. First clue. We're told Abel brought, look back at it, the firstlings of his flock. Word can be used a couple of different ways. Can refer to firstborn. Does not have to. Under the law, you brought the firstborn, but if the firstborn was mutilated or maimed, it was unacceptable. And so you brought the firstborn that was acceptable. So it also has the idea of the best being brought. Now read farther. Nothing similar is said of Cain's. Abel brought the firstlings of his flock. Cain brought produce of the ground. Maybe he brought the leftovers. Maybe he brought second best. Maybe he brought the second harvest. Hebrews 11 and verse 4 says, Abel's offering was superior. Second clue, Cain obviously has an attitude problem. When his offering is rejected, he responds violently. Hebrews tells us that it was by faith that Abel offered a superior sacrifice. Cain's faith's not mentioned, so there's an attitude issue going on somewhere. Maybe Cain offers his grudgingly. Maybe he offers it because he sees Abel's going to make an offering and he wants to seem equal to him. Very important. Take note of this. There is a grammatical detail that supports this clue. Very specifically, it is written, and the Lord had regard for Abel and for his offering. But for Cain and his offering, he had no regard. It was not just Abel's offering that he accepted. It was Abel that he accepted and his offering with him. It was not just Cain's offering that is rejected. He rejects Cain and his offering with him. Cain has an attitude problem that God can see. And it appears that that attitude problem has led him to offer an inferior sacrifice. And it's inferior not because of the what, not because it's produce, but because of the why, the how, the quality, or maybe all of that. What's the result? Okay, no specific details, but we do get some clues. Cain has an attitude issue. Maybe it leads him to offer something that's inferior in value, or because of his attitude, God sees it inferior, so God rejects it. What's the result? It says Cain's frustrated. Very angry. He is so frustrated, so angry, that it says his countenance fell. That is the idea of it being a physical manifestation on one's face. God can see he's mad. Cain's not one of those who can hide his emotions. He's one of those that when the blood is boiling, you see it. It's evident. And God can see it on his face. At that point, the gate is open. In Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 28, a man who cannot control his spirit is compared to a city broken into, a city without walls, open to the enemy. No gate. The walls have tumbled. God can see. God can see what is about to happen because of his attitude. And he sounds the alarm. Awake, fear, fire, foes. Awake. He tries to head it off. He tries to get Cain to turn from his impulses. Before anything else can happen, he warns Cain. First of all, he warns him to awake. God says, why are you angry? What's the reason? Stop. Wake up for a minute, and I want you to think, Cain. Be reasonable. Calm down. Let the water cool for a minute. And let's talk about this. What reason do you have to be angry? Basically, God is saying to him, it's not that I rejected you and your offering because of partiality. It's not that I liked Abel better than you. It wasn't because of spite. I wasn't just trying to jab at you. So why are you angry? God says, you're the reason. There's no one else to blame. You're at fault. So wake up and let's reason through this. The second thing God says is fear. Why is your countenance fallen? Why is it so that you are so angry that it has taken control of you? Check your tune. You might want to grab a hold of yourself right now. Be afraid, Cain. You need to be very, very afraid because you're about to do something that's really dumb. You're about to make a mistake from which you will not recover. Be afraid. Examine why you've allowed this to take control of you. The third thing God says, it's fire. You're standing on the edge. If you do well, I'll accept you. You lit the fire. Put it out before it consumes you. Do the right thing. Start over. I'll accept you just like I accepted Abel. If you do what's right. But as it is, right now you've lit the fire and you're about to jump into the middle of it. It's going to consume you. Foes. Sin is at the door. You want to talk about a warning. You know, we all have that moment before we take that next action. We have that next thought. We say that next word where we have that moment we can head it off. We know we're in trouble. What if God just said it out loud? Sin's at the door. The serpent is knocking. Temptation has arrived. The lion is roaring. Listen to it. Sin is crouching at the door. When a cat crouches, what's it going to do? It's going to pounce. Sin's about to pounce on you. I know what you're thinking. Now imagine that. You're standing there, you're Cain, you're angry, you're so angry that your face is turned red, your blood is boiling, your hands are shaking, and God has said, wake up, let's reason through this, be afraid of what you're about to do, fire has been lit, and now God says, basically, I know what you're thinking. Would you not stop and reevaluate? God said, I know what's going through your heart. I know what you're about to do. So wake up. You have to master it. This is up to you. The next step is yours. Open your eyes, Cain. Watch where you're about to put your foot. Choose the right. It's all up to you. At this point, God's done everything He can for Cain. It's time to decide. And he does. Cain decides to ignore God. He refuses to shut the gate. He refuses to rebuild his walls. I think my battery just died. No, there it goes. Maybe my controller's dying. Because he doesn't put the gate back up, because he doesn't rebuild the wall, sin walks through. Sin pounces. Sin pounces through the gate, takes control. At the moment that Cain gives in and acts on his impulse, Satan's in control. He's won that battle. Verse 8 says, and Cain told Abel his brother. Told him what? Literally it says, Cain said to his brother. If you read on the next sentence, we can infer that he lured him into the field. This is premeditated. That he asked him, that he told him, come outside. What did he tell him? Come here. I got something to show you. I got something I need you to do. Whatever the case is. He says something to him that allows him to get Abel outside. And then it says he rose up. That image in our mind, when we use that phrase, we think of a nation or a group of people rising up in rebellion. We think of rising to the occasion. We think of being stirred to action. It's almost as if you can see Cain has called Abel outside and then Cain is hidden behind the rock. Abel gets outside and Cain physically rises up to kill him. Mind pictures for a minute. I want you to think about this. Brother against brother. He kills him, but he kills him in a society where there's no guns. There's no quick, easy death. There's no lethal injection. For Cain to kill Abel in that day and time, he either beat him to death with a staff, a rock, his hands, or stabbed him, or choked him. Brother on brother. violent, an intense struggle, possibly bloody, prolonged. He is so angry that he takes the time not to shoot him and be done with it, but the extended time to take his brother's life. Violence has entered our world. Why? Why kill your brother? Because you messed up. John tells us. Because all the way back to the beginning of this story, John tells us that Cain's deeds are evil. The sacrifice, the attitude, the whole process is evil. And Abel's were righteous. Cain has a heart problem. Cain has an attitude issue. So God returns. God steps back into the story. Where's your brother? Here's your chance, Cain. Come clean with me. Tell me what you've done. Own up to the sin. Let's deal with this. And Cain tries to play innocent. I don't know. Is it my job to look out for him? I don't know. He knows he's been warned. He knows what he did was wrong. And he doesn't want to get caught. You might be thinking, as the world does, whoa, wait a minute, Otis, there's no command. God's not said anything about don't kill your brother. True. But the moment Eve took that first bite, she had the knowledge of good and evil. Our moral compasses kicked in. From that moment on, there are certain things we just know are wrong. They're wrong across the board in every culture. That's one of them. One of those things that right before you do it, you look around and make sure nobody else is watching. That's one of them. So Cain knows. Cain knows he's been caught red-handed. And God's not going to play along. So his next question, what have you done? Seriously? I reject your offering and so you take it out on your brother? And you see God's anger, and you see the broken heart. Fourth chapter of the book of Genesis, whether it relates to murder, abuse of the innocent, abortion, war that takes the life of little children. Notice from Genesis chapter 4 on, God's view on the sanctity of life. That it is precious. That it is to be respected. Especially the life of the innocent. When it comes to the guilty, God deals with them. He said, I don't like it, but I deal with them. But he said, when it comes to the innocent, I will protect them. Trial over. Cain does not get a chance to defend himself because you see, in this case, the judge is all seeing. The judge is all knowing. Your brother's blood is crying out to me from the ground. I know what you did. Here's your sentence. From now on, the life you love, working in the ground, no longer benefits you. When you work the ground, it's not going to produce for you. And you're not going to have a home. You're going to spend the rest of your life wandering. And Cain, as if he has a right to feel injured, said, that's too much. God, you're too harsh. No living, no home, no God, no protection. My family's going to track me down and kill me for what I've done. God said, no, you're not totally alone. I'll take care of you. No one's going to touch you. I'm going to mark you in such a way, and it doesn't say anything in there about a physical mark. It's probably the idea that God is letting the world know, don't touch this man. Through divine revelation, it can be a physical mark, but there's no reference to it. God said, nobody's going to touch you. If he does, he's going to suffer seven times the normal punishment for his crime. And so as time goes on, whatever the standard put into place by society, by this burgeoning, by this growing society, God said, I'll take care of anybody who touches Cain. Well, let's finish this up. It's through Cain's line that his son fills the first city. It's through Cain's line, if you go on down through chapter 4, that we get the first nomadic herdsman. It's through Cain's line that we get the first musicians. And it's through Cain's line that we get the first metal workers. It's also, if you follow this all the way as we're going to Noah, it's also through Cain's line that violence continues. Cain's followers, Cain's down the generations, those ancestors. Lamech boasts of killing a man, verses 23 and 24, and he brags. And he brags that if Cain's vengeance was sevenfold, mine's 77-fold on my enemy. And so violence continues through the line of Cain. Got a problem all of a sudden. And it took us not even to the end of chapter 4, so we're 3.5 chapters into it. Do you see what the problem is? God's plan is in trouble. According to our text, as far as the part that God's tracing, Adam and Eve have 2 sons. Before chapter 4 is over, they're down 2 sons. One's been murdered. The other's been exiled. And if you trace it, Cain's line ends at the flood. If God's going to make this work, He has to have another line. The plan's in jeopardy. We're just a couple of days down into this, or a couple of years down into this, and all of a sudden, we've run out of people. So God has to start over. And Adam and Eve have another son, and his name is Seth. And the name Seth means to appoint or to compensate. So God has appointed a replacement for Abel. He has compensated for what's now missing. And look, I understand, not personally, but I can understand, there's no replacing a lost child. But nothing is going to help the healing process like new life, especially when you realize the hand of God's involved. And so Seth is born, and it's through his line, through his son Enosh, that man returns to worship, that man rectifies the relationship with God. So let's make some connections real fast. Jesus is born into the line of Seth, Luke chapter 3 and verse 38. And so God's plan continues. God's able to carry it out. Second New Testament connection, we see the importance of faith. Abel is listed in Hebrews chapter 11. It's by faith that he offered the superior sacrifice. That it's by faith that we're going to offer superior worship. It's by faith that we're going to do everything of value. We also see the New Testament connection that from the beginning God had a standard for worship. And He didn't necessarily have to line it out to these first people in a written code, but He expected them to know it. John chapter 4 and verse 24, that standard of worship has continued. To the woman at the well, God must be worshipped in spirit and truth. Heads up real fast. Chapter 5 through chapter 6, verse 12, next week, we will look at the references to Enoch and Methuselah. 2 very short references, but very powerful. We'll look at the depravity of man. And we will look at the fact that Noah finds favor with God. So let's offer the invitation. Let's conclude this, make our application. What did we learn? Well, we learned, number one, there are always warning signs. God always warns us. It may be through our conscience. It may be through a moral compass that's built into us. It may be through friends. It may be through the Word. But when we're staring sin in the eyes, when we're staring at temptation and we're considering the next step, there's always the bell. Unless we've seared our conscience, there's always the bell. The warning. Do not take that step. Which brings us to the second thing. There's always that moment where we stand at the edge of the fire. The moment where we can step back if we choose to. The moment where we can put the fire out, where we can choose, where we can choose the other path. When we're staring temptation in the eye, The next step is ours. Nobody tells us what to do. Nobody makes us do anything. The phrase, Satan made me do it on Saturday Night Live, doesn't work. We stand there. We're on the edge of the knife. We're on the edge of the cliff. We're on the edge of the fire. And we have to decide, while the bell is going off. So we can't be like Cain. We can't just shut God out. Because we see where it got him. We're in control. If you're not right with God, maybe because you haven't obeyed the gospel yet. Maybe you know the truth. Maybe you've been here week in and week out and you've heard that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And you've heard that there's only one plan of salvation. And it is the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ Jesus, obeyed through hearing, believing, repenting, confessing, and being baptized for the forgiveness of your sins. If you've done all that and you're still, if you've heard all of that but you hadn't done it, you're not right with God, you're standing on the edge of that pit. Like Cain, you've been warned. You're staring temptation in the eye right now. Listen to me. If you've heard the gospel and you've not obeyed it, you are staring temptation in the eye. And if you turn and walk out that door, sin has pounced on you. And the gate was open and you let him in. It's time to obey. If you're a child of God, you've obeyed the gospel. You've stared sin in the eye and you gave in. It's time to come home. It's time to repent. Please take the warnings of God seriously and act on them before it's too late. As we stand and sing.